activity. I'm presenting today with Klaus Rademacher, who is from KRBE. Klaus is a consultant we've been working with since 2009 on the IANA Business Excellence activity. And we're going to talk a little bit about the model that we have been going through using, and then we're going to talk about the activities and results. And then, you know, anyone who wants to speak, we're going to have a discussion. We're looking for your input on basically what we're doing and so on. So I'm going to hand over to Klaus, who's going to kick us off.
Thank you, Neil. Good morning from my side, and welcome to this workshop. I'm really happy that you're here. At 8:30, when the room was still quite empty, I had thought, well, the biggest threat for us was probably that wonderful event last night up the CN Tower. How many of you have been there? Most of all, brave people. Yeah, I left at 9:45 in order to be up and awake this morning, so I know that it went much longer and was really, really, really good. I assume you're all interested in business excellence, otherwise you wouldn't be here. And as Leo already said, we want this to be a workshop, an interactive session. So please speak up if there are any questions, if there's something that you want to add or comment on. This is the overview of what we intend to do this morning. We have an hour and a half. If we just run through the presentation, we'll be done by 30 minutes. So it's not that we're going to speak here forever. This is really going to be something where we want to engage in a discussion with you. As Leo mentioned, I've been working with the IANA team since 2009, so we have been doing this business excellence activity for the last 3 years now, and I do believe, and I've heard that from others, that there are first results to be seen, and what I'd like you to get acquainted with, to get to know first, is the fundamental model that we are working on, which is called the EFQM model, or also the EFQM methodology. May I just ask quickly, who of you have heard about EFQM before? Does that mean this acronym? Does it ring a bell? Well, Elise, yes. You're from the UK, right? EFQM is very prominent. EFQM stands for European Foundation for Quality Management. And it is one, I deliberately say that it's one model, it's one methodology to get started or to put or to base your business excellence activities on. There are a couple of others. One of them is Malcolm Baldrige. Who of you have heard of Malcolm Baldrige? Okay, several hands go up. There's also Deming, very prominent in Japan. Was originally started by a American professor in Japan already in the 50s. EFQM and Malcolm Baldrige, they both were developed at about the same time in the mid to late 80s. By the way, Malcolm Baldrige at that time was the Secretary of Commerce, I believe, in the Reagan administration, and he's the one who started that. And EFQM was started by several international large corporations. What is EFQM about? There are 8 fundamental concepts of excellence. And they are written here. I hope that can be read from the back. These 8 fundamental concepts of excellence are embedded in a way that none of them is primary to the other. They all have the same value. There is no prioritization in these concepts. They are all of equal importance. That is very important to understand. And out of these fundamental concepts of excellence, then comes a model with 9 criteria. We'll see those later. These 9 criteria consist of 5 so-called enabling criteria. They enable an organization on their way to excellence, and then there are 4 results criteria. We'll look at that a little later. I'd just like to say a few words about these 8 fundamental concepts of excellence, starting at the top, although there is no order. There is no, as I said, there is no one concept which is more important than the other. But adding value for customers, what does that mean? What does that mean? It basically means that every organization on its way to excellence should always be aware of the fact that everything you do should be somehow associated with adding value for the customers. And that means that you have to know your customer groups, you have to know what their expectations are. That is a very, very important part of it. You must anticipate the expectations, and you have to come up with a strategy that meets the expectations of your customers. If you are not adding value to your customers, eventually you will be out of business. It's as simple as that. Looking at the next one, sustaining outstanding results. The important part here is the sustaining. Having good results is something, yes, we all thrive for that. We all try to achieve that. But business excellence is not about optimizing quarter financial results. It's about outstanding results in a sustainable way, and that has a short-term, a mid-term, and a long-term perspective. And the other important thing is that the results have to be outstanding results with regard to all stakeholders. Organizations do not only have one stakeholder group. There are customers, there is the community, there are the people in the organization, there in the ICANN world, there are all these constituencies. All of these are stakeholders that sometimes might have even conflicting interest. And the business excellent approach allows you to combine and to develop a strategy even out of conflicting interests. That is a very, very important part of it. Succeeding through the talent of people means that you got to ensure that the people you have on board, the employees in your organization, that you use their talent, that you train and educate them, that you deal with them in a way that they are capable of meeting the stakeholders' expectations, of meeting the strategic objectives that the organization has. So you care for your people. Very important part of it. Employees, people are one stakeholder group in an organization, a very important one. They are at least as important as the customers, because the customers won't get any service if there are no people working for the organization. Okay, manage it with agility. That is a concept that describes that you have to have a management system in place that allows you to be adapt to necessary changes. It allows you to be ready when the environment changes. And I think we are all aware of the fact that in this particular scenario we're working in, ICANN is working in, IANA is working in, that this is a scenario that is rapidly changing. So the agility, managing with agility, has to ensure that you are really capable of managing this change. Leading with vision, inspiration, and integrity. That is a concept that directly reflects to one of the criteria we're going to see later on. The criterion is leadership. The business excellence model requires the leaders of the organization to act as role models. They have to be capable of developing the appropriate strategies and policies together with the stakeholders and deploy that in strategic objectives and discuss that with their employees. And all of that happens in a way that the leaders are inspiring, that they are that they work in an integrity way, so that really everyone sees that our leaders mean what they say. It's not only lip service that they deliver. This is a very, very important aspect as well. Harnessing creativity and innovation, once again, has a lot to do with managing change. You got to be creative and you got to be innovative if you want to be ready for the future. However, there is one important aspect. Business excellence with regard to innovation does not mean that you do innovation just for the purpose of doing something new. Everything that you do in the innovative part actually means what is the value that it gives to you? How does it help you serve better by using an innovative technology? You never use something just because it is there. It is always related, again, to what is the value that something adds for the customer. Developing organizational capability. Yeah, once again, this has a lot to do with the change management, setting up the organization, getting it structured in a way that you can actually service your customers appropriately, that the people can work, that the people are cared for. All these are things that relate to this concept of developing the organizational capability. And then, last one I'm going to talk about, but no way least, creating a sustainable future. Sustainable future means we care not only for the organization, but for the global environment around us. That is a very important aspect. It's not only about the very one organization. It's about the environment. It's about the global community that is being served. And especially in the situation that ICANN is in, and if you look at who IANA provides services to, this is the world. And that is what creating a sustainable future wants to represent. Okay, next slide, please, Leo. The intended outcomes are, and that is another fundamental aspect with regard to the business excellence approach based to EFQM, is you always, for everything that you do, for the strategy that you have, for the vision that you want to achieve, for the mission that you have, you define what is it exactly that you would like to do. You define planned results. And then you have to find a systematic approach of doing that. You got to deploy that approach, and then you want to make sure that this is all sustainable, and the approach is being, or the deployment of the approach is being measured, and you compare these measurements against the results that you intended to have, and then you start assessing them and refine them. So there is this kind of circle of planning, developing an approach, deploying this approach, assessing the results, and refine the approach in order to become better. There has a lot to do with areas for improvement, with continual improvement. And this is what we have described here in this circle. Everything is supposed to be systematic, not necessarily ad hoc. Of course, every one of us has gut feelings every now and then. We need to do that. But you should try to find a systematic way of saying why your gut feeling is something that you want to follow on. And it is usually possible. So it has a lot to do with managing by facts and figures rather than just saying, oh, I feel like it. We should do it this way. Yeah? Then everything you do should be sustainable. And by doing that, you develop a framework for improvement. And this framework for improvement is something that will be kind of run through and will be executed. And you will definitely see, if you do this the right way, that the results do improve. Now, I have spoken about the eight fundamental concepts. And I told you that there are altogether 9 criteria in the EFQM model. And this is the model as it is being presented by the EFQM. If you look at it from left to right, it starts with the leadership. I already mentioned that. And then there are people, strategy, partnerships and resources, and processes. These are the 5 so-called enabling criteria. And for each of the criteria, it is defined what excellent organizations are supposed to be achieving on these criteria. Now, there's one thing I want to make very clear. EFQM is a model. It does not tell you how to run an organization. No way. It does not tell you how to do things. It only tells you how you see whether the things you do actually fulfill the criteria of this model. And then there are the results criteria, customer results, very important. Do the customers, when you measure what you deliver for your customers, when you ask the customers for feedback, they will give you a result where you can see whether you meet your strategic objectives, whether you meet what you have defined in your vision and in your mission. Then there are people results, very similar. They can be achieved by employee surveys. Yeah? There are society results. How are you perceived as an organization in the society? How do you use this information in order to manage your organization? And last but no way least, there are the key results. So this model, going from left to right, has the enabling criteria and then the results criteria. And if you measure the results, you go back to the enabling criteria and you have the process of learning and creativity. This is basically the assessment and the refinement. Okay. And this is the last slide I'm going to talk about. This shows where we have achieved from the assessments that we have undertaken since 2010. We have had three self-assessments already within the IANA team. The fourth one is scheduled for January of 2013. And these are the four areas, the four criteria, where we have made the biggest progress. You measure that. You get scores in the assessments. So one was with leadership, then definitely with processes, products, and services, then with customer results, and also with key results. This does not mean that we are done, whatever. Business excellence is not a project where you ever get to an end. It's a mindset. It's a culture in an organization. But this is just what I wanted to share with you about the basics of the model, about the general idea of business excellence based on the EFQM model. And now Leo will take over and talk to you about what exactly we achieved, in particular with regard to customer results, because we did conduct a customer survey for the first time earlier this year.
Well, thank you very much. I am going to talk a little bit about processes, stakeholder engagement, and then reviewing and refining in this section. So in this slide here, we've got two important things. On the my left, your right, we have got an example of one of the process flow diagrams that we developed. This one is the escalation process, basically the I want to make a complaint process. This example comes from our proposal that went into the request for proposals from NTIA, and it has been published on the NTIA website. You can go and download it. You can basically go and look through most of the processes that we use on a regular basis. You can see that this one has nice, pretty colors, and it looks really good. The ones we use on a day-to-day basis aren't actually printed up like that. But the important thing is we have used a very standard methodology with swim lanes, standard flow charting, and every single box has a description that goes through the steps, what we're going to be doing, which documents to refer to, all of that. It's very highly structured. That's the what we do. This here is the what we want to achieve. This is an extract from our key performance indicator results and targets. So in this example, we're looking at the key performance indicator targets for Root DNSSEC key management. as targets, they're very easy to summarize. Basically, we decided that our target was that we had to be perfect for everything. There is no 95% pass mark on this. And we have a clearly defined target, for instance, complete the ceremony no later than 33 days prior to the signature expiration, and it's either a pass or a fail. I obviously selected this one because everything has a green dot and the word pass. We have been real sticklers for process with the DNSSEC, root DNSSEC key management. Also here we've got the obtained SysTrust certification by undergoing the annual third-party audit. That was retained. We had our certification renewed on the 27th of January. And so this is a result which we have achieved as an implementation of the model that Klaus has described, and we're doing it not just because it's good for us, but because it's obviously good for everyone. And so we've made an attempt to go and measure how satisfied our customers and stakeholders are with what we're doing. Earlier this year, during April, I believe, we conducted a customer satisfaction survey. In the satisfaction survey, we did have it as available as a click-through from our website, but we also sent an invitation to 957 email addresses, some of which we know were expanders for internal mailing lists. We think we reached about 1,000 people, and they came from TLD operators, IETF leadership, including RFC authors, because of course we work with every single RFC author as part of the protocol parameters management process, the RIRs, and root DNS server operators. And this is who responded. You can see that overwhelmingly it was people from the ccTLD community, but also IETF leadership responded quite significantly. That's not a surprise. Something like half or more of our work is to do with protocol parameters management. So, it's what you would expect, that we had good input from those two groups. We had input from everyone that we targeted. We also had in the other category some people who had just clicked through from the website. Sometimes they had gone to one of the example websites, found us, and wanted to leave feedback. And of course, they are internet users. We want to hear from them as well. So this next bit is, we asked the people who completed our survey, how important to you are these aspects of our service? So things like staff courtesy. How important is it? Well, if you go and look, this is most important and red is very important. People didn't rate staff courtesy as particularly important to them. We actually think that we should always be polite to the people who we deal with. We rate it quite highly ourselves, but we can understand why people didn't rate staff courtesy so highly. We actually made this a bit of a forced choice. You could only rate one thing as the most important and then another thing as the next important and so on. And the thing that people said was the most important, we do agree with, is registry accuracy. And we're a little bit surprised that some people said it was the least important thing. But, there you go. It's a big wide world, and people can have all sorts of opinions. But clearly, we have had good input from our customers. They think that the accuracy of the registries that we operate is the most important thing. And the other things that they think are really important, we totally agree with: request speed and process clarity. And, you know, we are completely there. We agree. We have got to have an efficient service. And frankly, if our processes aren't clear to you, then we're not going to have an efficient service. So, we're taking this on board, and these are areas that we are working on. So if we move on to the next slide, we've got the satisfaction levels. And in order to get to the unsatisfied and very unsatisfied, you have to go way beyond 80%. So basically, we do have good levels. I could even say, can I say excellent levels of satisfaction? I would like to say excellent levels of satisfaction. Not good enough, because they're not 100%, and we would like 100% for everything. That's something we need to move forwards to in the future. But for staff courtesy, request speed, registry accuracy, process clarity, and documentation quality, we have really pretty good levels of satisfaction from all the people who completed our survey. Now, we've been putting down here the number of people who participated. We know that we reached about 1,000 people with invitations. We had hoped to get between 10 and 15% response rate. We actually got something like 23 to 24% response rate. That's good, because we exceeded our target. It shows that the services we provide are actually important to our customers, and we are grateful for you providing input to us on what's important to you and how good we are, so that we know where to focus our efforts at improvement. Because, as Klaus has said, this is something where we have to systematically improve. We have to look for areas where we're strong and areas that need improvement, and work out where we're going to where we should focus our attention to get the best benefit for our customers and for the indirect users of our services. So we have a new survey coming up. We were very happy to be awarded the IANA contract again earlier this year. It started on the 1st of October, and the new IANA contract has a contract requirement for us to do a customer satisfaction survey every year. So if we go and look at the next slide, we can go and look at the requirements for that customer satisfaction survey. It has to be annual. We have to collaborate with NTIA in developing the survey. Most importantly, it has to be consistent with the performance standards for each of the IANA functions. We have to develop performance standards with you, our customers, over the next few months. And we then have to reflect those performance standards in the customer satisfaction survey that we're going to be doing every year. And not yet. We also have to have a feedback section for each of the IANA functions. So if you go, if we actually go back a couple of slides and go back to the one where we look at the distribution of people who contributed to the survey, you can go and see here that we allow multiple designations. It's entirely possible that you could work for a TLD operator and also be part of the IESG leadership. You might be on the IAB or the IESG. You might be an author of an RFC. You might have other roles as well. It's entirely possible that in the future you could operate one kind of CCTLD, and also provide back-end services for other kinds of TLDs as well. So we said just go and select all the groups that you fit into so that we have an idea of where the responses are coming from. What we didn't do was we didn't collate this person identified as coming from a CCTLD and gave these responses. And we certainly didn't, because it was an anonymous survey, we didn't go and say, oh, well, Leslie says that we're not very good. We didn't do that. One of the things we have to do in the contract requirement for the annual customer satisfaction survey is we have to maintain anonymity. So we have to do some kind of segmentation. Actually, if we could go forward to the the slide where we're looking at the requirements here, we have to have feedback from each IANA function, but we have learned as ICANN that long surveys don't go down very well with people. They don't want to dedicate 45 minutes to telling us how good or bad we are. They want something that's relatively quick. This survey that we did at the start of the year took people on average between 3 and 5 minutes, I would guess. That's not such a an inconvenience. Also, people don't want to give their contact information. On the other hand, we have to have feedback for each IANA function. That means we need to target the questions so that if you are IETF leadership, you don't get asked how good do you think the root zone management process is, because it's not the process that you deal with. So we have to have some kind of segmentation. We want to maintain anonymity. So if we move on to the next slide, this is the requirements that we have. We want to be able to do some statistical assessment on, you know, the TLD operators say, you know, this, and the RIRs say that, and then we would know how well we are doing at each of those different things, and we would know where we need to target our improvement efforts. Our thoughts are that in order to maintain that anonymity, what we should do is we should engage a third-party contractor, and that third-party contractor should have a requirement that they only provide us the bulk statistical data and they don't provide us the individual responses. So that we would pretty much get the same results that we would be publishing to the rest of the world. We would not know which RIR said this and which TLD said that and which of the ISG said something else. It would only be, you know, you've got some graphs showing how good and how bad you are, and that would be it. We also have an idea for when we should be doing this. We're looking to do this sometime towards the end of the second quarter, maybe in the third quarter next year. That's roughly when we did the last survey, and be interested in your feedback on when that is. We have to do this every year, so it's a contract requirement. We don't get to change the periodicity to 18 months or 2 years. Louis, you wanted to make a comment?
Well, considering that there's a large number of other category as respondents, did you have a free-form text box for self-description so that you can find out the next time what new category to add?
Yes, we did have that in the survey that we conducted earlier this year. People could self-describe, and though we have to do something that segments so that we have group appropriate questions, I think we would probably want to have a sort of non-specific survey of some kind where we could go and just say, you know, if you are an internet user, what do you think? Because although we have direct customers, we also have indirect customers, derived customers. you know, we have, say, the RIRs as customers, but they have ISPs as customers, and those ISPs go and use our services. They look at our registries for all sorts of things, and what they think is really important to us. I mean, we know that people said registry accuracy was the most important thing. So I think it's important that we don't just target the direct users who ask for registrations. I think it's important that we have something that is non-specific or generic or whatever term you want to use and is available to internet users at large so that they can go and give us their input and tell us what's important to them. Okay, so moving on, we've got some future plans. If we go on to the next slide, we're looking for non-statistical stakeholder input. We were very happy, as I said, to be awarded the IANA Functions contract. As part of the IANA Functions contract, we have to produce a number of deliverables over the 6 to 9 months from the contract start date. These include things like developing user instructions, developing documents describing the origin and implementation of policies, talking about developing performance standards. In the past, we've had very clear ideas internally of what our performance standards should be. We've developed our processes, our KPIs, we've developed targets and measurements, but we haven't had the freedom to go and consult with each of the individual customer groups and reach agreements on the performance standards required for the IANA, the contracted IANA functions. We want your input. We're really happy that we've got these contract requirements because these are the sorts of things that we've wanted to do for quite some time. We want to get your input. We're going to be having some consultation sessions. They'll start with us describing the sort of thing that we think sounds like a good basis for whatever the, you know, the whether it's the user instructions or the performance standards, and you know, us presenting that and having an opportunity for a discussion. We're thinking of doing that as a webinar. Basically, you would be welcome to come to our offices, but these have to happen very soon, and people tend to make their travel plans well in advance. So we're going to be making those available as webinars. We're also going to be using that old ICANN standard, the public comment period. After the consultation sessions, which will be webinars, we will develop documents as an output from that. We'll publish the document. It will go through public comment period. If there are public comments which say multiple different things, there'll be an opportunity for a reply period, and we'll then, depending on the comments that we get, we either will go through the process again, or we will just go and come up with what is the final thing. We'll seek approval for that, and it will be published. But we need your input so that we can get it right. We think we have a good idea, but we want you to guide us, because without your guidance, it's never going to be quite perfect. So if we move on, this is the bit where I'm hoping to turn off the microphone and listen to you. I have a pen, I have a pad, I want to take notes, and of course I'm happy to answer questions, but I'm hoping that I'm going to do a lot less talking, and you, our customers, whether you're a direct customer who regularly uses our services or someone who just looks at our registries, please tell us what you really think. Maybe I should start by asking a hello. Yeah, maybe I should start by asking a question. So, specifically on the customer satisfaction survey, I described our proposal for how we think it might work, where we have a third-party contractor who just gives us statistical results, not the raw input, and we have some targeted questions for each of the different customer services that we offer. If people could provide input on their own experiences with this kind of thing, what is best practice, what kind of survey they would be interested in providing input to, that would be a really good thing for us to start. And then it would be nice to broaden the discussion to more general, we've been doing something like this as well, and we found all of that would be really good over the next 40 minutes or so.
Was there a question? Yep, there.
Martin Boyle from Nominet. For a survey that is based on customer satisfaction with a service, I found it a little bit odd to widen the survey group to people who might well not have used the service. And I'm not sure I really got the understanding from your presentation as to why you thought that that was appropriate. It would seem to me that the group you go to every year are the group you've given service to during that year, and therefore it's actually a very clear group, and people have got an interest in responding to the survey. Or did I just miss something as you were talking?
Thank you. That's a good question. So we do have direct customers. So organizations like Nominet are obviously a direct customer of Root Management. We also have, you might call them derived customers or just joint customers, people who go and use the registries that we publish. So they're not the organizations that have their records in the Root Zone or request blocks of address space, but they're the people who go and look up what's in the IANA Whois database for the TLD registration, or they go and look at an IP address registry, or they might be software developers who make use of protocol parameter registries so that they can get their software right. And they don't have any kind of direct business relationship with us, but they definitely use our services. And to some extent, we both share those customers because they're also your customers. And although you as an organization are receiving the direct benefit, the only reason that you and we are working together is for this other group. And so we're looking for this other group to go and tell us, are we doing well? Do they want improvements in the registries that we publish rather than the process that we have for maintaining those registries? I hope that explains.
There's another question here, the gentleman with the hat.
Yep. Hi, this is Louis. Neil, if at some point you're able to correlate the type of users with the answers, you might find that those are the third-party customers, the derived customers, might be the ones that are answering where staff courtesy is not so important to them because they're not the ones engaging IANA directly.
Yeah, I think you could well be right. They probably don't have any interaction with staff, so there isn't a need for staff courtesy because they're just looking at a web page or something. But it is one of, I mean, the reason we put it in there is because we think staff courtesy is important. We certainly don't want to treat our customers with any disrespect.
Elise, yeah.
Elise Garrick Guyana, ICANN. I'd like to ask the group if, because we have a lot of different organizations represented, if you all have different quality management programs in-house, and you know what model you might be using, if you're willing to share, just kind of a curiosity.
Yeah, Leslie, please.
And I never said I was unhappy with IANA's service, by the way, just in case anyone got that impression. So we use EFQM, we also have ISO, and we do quality to death. So I was just going to make a point on surveys, because I think there's a kind of evolution of surveys. I was one of the people who did complete the survey. I found it quite basic. And also, as I've not really used IANA recently, it wasn't quite so relevant. So at Nominet, we do no end of customer surveys as well. We do an annual survey. We do some in-depth conversations with our customers. And we also do something which might be appropriate for IANA, which is kind of a post-transaction survey. So at the point when you've just used the service, how was it for you? Because that's when the information is most fresh. Mm-hmm. And when you are more able to form and give valuable feedback as a customer.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Leslie. Anybody else?
Thank you. Mathieu from AFNIC. We also use EFQM, the EFQM framework. We do customer satisfaction surveys that are basically based on registrars at this stage, but also internal surveys. About staff satisfaction surveys. One thing we find useful, and I thought I would offer it as a suggestion, is in the survey to leaving respondent as anonymous as basis is okay, but we insert in our surveys the option for the respondent to say, if we want to have an in-depth conversation with you, would you be okay? And that creates a lot of interesting feedbacks and enables from direct engagement after the survey.
Could you briefly say, do you have any idea how many of the people that answer the survey are willing to provide this information for ongoing conversation? Is that more than 10%?
For our registrars, it's a large majority of respondents. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Interesting idea. Yeah, thank you. Anybody else want to volunteer if they do any quality management or other kinds of, I guess, gathering of information from your customer base?
I would like to make a brief statement, comment to Leslie. Yes, we are absolutely aware that the survey we did was really basic, but we thought it was far more important to get started with the survey, at least, instead of waiting for another 6 months or so and have someone kind of develop a very, very complex, intricate survey that would probably last people much, much longer to answer. And our idea was, let's get going, let's get out to the community that IANA would like to get feedback from the customers, and we're well aware of that there is room for improvement with regard to the detailed level of the survey and with regard to the overall survey topic. Any other questions? Yes, Louis, please.
I have a comment or a question that's unrelated to Elise's question, though, so if I can wait if anybody else wants to have input on that.
No? Okay, Louis, okay. Step back. But
all right.
Okay.
If there's nobody else. So to follow on what Leslie was saying, that if you're using a service and then it's fresh in your mind, then you answer a survey. Might there be like a link at the very top of the page where related to a service that might say, was this registry accurate? Do you want to tell us? And then just have a quick 3 to 4 question survey. Who are you? Like what kind of user you are? Then was this registry accurate? Is there anything else you want to say? It's just a short thing, maybe even as an ongoing thing, but I don't know if there's room in the framework to allow for ongoing trending type surveys where you can like look back the last 6 months. Is there a trend? things like that.
Louis, I like the idea about having a contact us link at the top of registries saying, you know, if there is an inaccuracy, please report it, and this is where to report it. I think that's a really good idea. I'm going to take that away. And I also definitely like the idea of having a post-transaction survey where, as our ticketing system marks something as resolved, it sends a message saying, you know, can you please complete a very short survey on how satisfied you were and what, you know, provide input. I think those are great things, and definitely going to take these suggestions away to see how we can implement them. Thank you very much.
There is a question from Wilfried.
Yeah, this is just sort of not a content thingy, but more the logistics, in particular in the with this idea of post-transaction queries. We are a customer of one global ISP which tends to use that mechanism. And I just want to give the feedback that if you do that too regularly, you are just annoying people and you won't get any information back because everybody just learns to just click it away. And just as a sort of, as a customer experience, just for the record, other people might have a completely other mindset with regard to that. But to the mechanics, I was not party to this previous questionnaire, but these customer surveys tend to be pretty popular these days from all the different quarters and ends of the environment. What I would really like to see, and that's usually the determining factor for me personally, whether I just go into it or I just click it away, if I can do a dry run. I really don't want to start filling in or answering the questions on the first one or two or three pages to only then find out for the rest of the 10 that it's completely useless because it does not apply to me. So just as a suggestion for the mechanics, if it is possible, just provide a means to just click through all the pages or click through all the questions. And then if I decide, well, it's worthwhile, I can really answer it, I will devote the time to do it professionally.
Mm-hmm. Wilfred, I think you're absolutely right that people who are answering a survey based on a particular customer relationship don't want questions that don't apply to their particular customer relationship. I think we should perhaps ask for input on what sort of time period do people see as acceptable for dedicating to a customer survey. One of the reasons we made the survey that we did in April so basic is because there was a report ICANN published into another survey ICANN did some months beforehand, and it had particularly low response. And two of the factors that were identified in the low response there were, firstly, the fact that it required that you provide contact information, and secondly, that it took something on the order of half an hour to 40 minutes to complete. And so we thought, well, okay, half an hour to 40 minutes is very long. Let's try and make it as short as possible and make it anonymous. And we did get a lot of responses, but maybe we went a little bit too far in making it very basic. And so we'd be obviously willing to ask more questions, because if we ask more questions, we can have you know, more useful input. So how long would people be willing to dedicate? Is 10 minutes or 15 minutes a good amount?
And if I may just add one other question to that, how often do you want to reply to a survey? Because the point Wilfried just made is very, very valid. And I would just assume that you do not want to receive a customer satisfaction survey from IANA every day. Well, every month probably would even be far too much. So there are ways of channeling that. For example, that after a particular transaction, you could randomly choose only 10% of such transactions. So these two criteria, how long with a particular survey and how often, I think that would be very, very helpful for us to understand your perception of that. Yes, please, Louis.
Well, I may suggest that for just asking a very short survey to a ticket response, to a ticket transaction, if you want to incorporate just a few questions at the bottom of the email, says that your ticket is closed, these were the closing comments, and then under that, just have a few questions, web form, that they can fill out and just answer back right about that ticket, then they have that already in front of them. Having a separate email that alerts you to a survey is, on every ticket that you close, it's fairly annoying, actually.
But in principle, I understand for every yes. ticket, you would be willing to tick mark a few boxes.
Yeah, just a few at the end of that ticket because it relates to a certain topic. If there's a way for you to categorize your ticket for the type of transactions that resolved, then that will allow you to be able to customize the survey.
Thank you. Other opinions? Leslie, please.
So to speak to the comment around how long, for me, I kind of lose interest after 10 minutes. So anything longer than that is just too long. Unless it's something I really, really feel very, very strongly about and, you know, have the opportunity to provide lots and lots of information on. I was just going to make a point around reward for surveys. So in the CCNSO, we have struggled sometimes to get meeting surveys filled in. And generally, the behaviour is that if you're happy with the meeting, you don't fill in the survey. If you're unhappy with the meeting, you have a strong desire to fill this in and make your feelings known. And just recently, because if you don't have sufficient surveys, you don't really get enough. It's not very informative, yeah. We've started giving out gadgets for nothing too serious or whatever, but it's just something to reward people for doing a survey. And I'm not suggesting ICANN pays or anything like that, but when you do the survey, you get something back is a good way of encouraging responses if you are concerned about getting a certain number of responses to give validity to the survey itself.
Thank you. That's a very interesting idea. Get like a free registry change or something like that.
To be fair, all registry changes are free.
I tried to make a joke. I'm sorry. Okay, I think Wilfried has another comment.
Yeah, just a 2D question of what amount of time would be appropriate. And for me, individually, it's just depending on whether I consider the survey useful. If there is sort of a clear indication that submitting my information is going to improve the interaction, mm-hmm. then I would even be willing to spend 30 minutes or maybe 40. If there is really something which is going to improve the relationship, if it's just this general, do you feel happy or tick from 1 to 4, I think even 5 minutes is too much. And this directly relates to this capability of really getting a good understanding of what the set of questions are for the full set.
Okay, so basically you're saying a structured survey dedicated to the target group is important, and then you're willing to spend more time on it. Thank you. Yes, Elise.
So I do have a follow-up question for particularly Mathieu and Leslie, but I think it's the rest of the room that I'd like to hear what you think about it. Both of you mentioned that you do more in-depth interviews or conversations with people. And I was curious, two things. One, do you have people from within your organization having those conversations, or do you have a third party having the conversation? And for those of you who didn't say that you do this type of thing, how welcome are you to have in-depth conversations on a topic about service and quality of service? So I guess the first two go to Mathieu and Leslie, and then the rest, I'm kind of curious how the rest of the room thinks.
Yeah, thank you, Elise. The follow-up in-depth conversations we have are handled by our customer service staff internally so that we get it the feedback directly, and they know each other, and there's supposed to be a trust relationship already between the customer and this person, so that's more useful. and we also do our customer surveys by online forms and phone calls. So before that, we also collect some feedback that goes beyond just filling in some forms, and we get a lot of verbatims that are extremely good source of information as well.
We have a customer service team as well that have ongoing conversations. But generally, we do try to use external companies because sometimes there's concern about providing feedback directly, and you don't necessarily get to hear the real feedback. You get, oh, of course I'm happy. And that's actually not what you're looking for. You're looking for something a bit more informative. The use of external companies also enables us to benchmark, and I think that's something that we haven't really covered. You know, there isn't another IANA that you can benchmark with. We don't have another .UK, but we are able to benchmark with other customer service organisations, for example. And the use of an external consultant or whatever, I think, can enable them to have other benchmarking information to see how you compare, which is good.
Okay, thank you. And so if I'm going to be so bold as to just go around the table, and maybe if I could start with Patricio, would you be willing to have a conversation on a survey instead of just a paper survey if we were to call you and have someone talk to you about the service IANA provides?
Yes, I think that could be feasible. Of course, the conversation would be most productive with the people that directly interact, in this case with IANA, which is part of our technical team. But I think it would be a good way to do it.
Okay, thank you. Wilfred, you're up next.
Yeah, well, in general, as I said, I don't have too many interactions with IANA directly. But on a more general basis, I would definitely be available to sort of to do an in-depth analysis, provided that the people doing it, whether it's the internal customer relations function or whether an external party, if those people actually do understand their own side of the game and the customer's end. I had two experiences during the last 6 months where external people in a different environment were trying to do that, and it was really annoying because it was more like educating them about the problem space than providing useful answers.
Okay, thank you. Hartmut.
It's not my business in Brazil to be work in this area, so probably some other from Brazil will answer. Frederico is there, probably can help us later.
Thank you, Martin.
Similar response here. It wouldn't be me who's using the IANA services, so I wouldn't know even where to start with the answering.
So maybe I should have people raise their hands who might be the right people to interview, or if you're volunteering people, instead of asking everyone. I don't know.
Yes, another Leslie. Yes, I would be willing to have a conversation, but the questions would have to be specific to my interactions with IANA. I don't want to answer general questions. I want to be specific.
Well, thanks, everybody.
Anyone here not sitting right in front of a microphone who would like to add something, or, as it was suggested, someone from Brazil? Okay.
I think maybe we exhausted that topic. Thank you. But I do have one other kind of question. And we talked about the fact that I am as...
Oh, excuse me. Now he would like to mention...
Frederico, okay, thank you.
I have been one of the great people that have complained about IANA in the past, but not lately, so I'm regarding TLD services, the services that you guys have been providing in the last 2 years, are just good enough. So, but anyway, regarding the surveys and the customer satisfaction, I have not that much to add in these situations that you are talking about.
Hopefully we can turn good enough into excellent in the future.
Hopefully.
Thank you. So the next thing I wanted to know is that those of you that are... Adiel, are you raising your hand or just... Anyway, my next question is, we've done self-assessments on the EFQM model, and I just wondered if any of the rest of you here, obviously you're here because you care about quality, do you do self-assessments of your own organizations, and do you follow a specific model other than EFQM or EFQM?
Yeah, the IT department of Vienna University was going through that exercise a couple of weeks ago, and I was only almost not involved, but I read through the results, and there was two observations from my end. The first one being how the way you word the questions or the way you word the investigation topic has a very strong influence on the results. So unless you succeed in making that really neutral, you tend to get two favorable results. Let's put it that way. And the second observation was there was a support function by a third party, and when the raw data was accumulated to draw conclusions, and I read the documents, and I scratched my head a couple of times. Like, if you look at the sort of the raw data that was presented in a graphic way, and then the conclusions drawn from that, it didn't seem to fit. So, if you condense that thing down to the management level, you may lose quite a bit of real substance in that. So I think it was a useful exercise to do it in our organization. I'm less happy with the results because I don't feel that they are correct.
Did they have a specific model, or was this just an outside consultant that has kind of led you through it, out of curiosity?
Not that I'm aware of, that it was based on a formal framework. But I simply don't know.
Anyone else have done this, or... Leo spoke about it briefly, and I'm going to chime in because the self-assessment, I thought it was kind of weird. I didn't really know the first time we did it what to expect. And the EFQM model, and Mathieu, I don't know if you've done it yet with self-assessment, but it is very structured. It has a framework. And we have about 8 people that participate. And Leo spends an awful lot of time writing the document that we all have to review, and that's the basis for our self-assessment and the framework that's used. And the document tends to be upwards of, 70 pages or so. And the only thing you're allowed to rate yourself when you do the self-assessment is what you've actually documented in the self-assessment document. So the first time I participated, which was 2.5 years ago, we didn't do so well, and partially it's we were sitting around and we'd say, well, yeah, we do that, and we should get points for that. And then we said, oh, but we didn't write it down. We don't have it documented. It's just in somebody's head around the table. And so every year it's helped us to focus on areas where we have kind of institutional knowledge, but if all of us were to get run over by a truck, it would be gone. And so I think the self-assessment in that framework has been very useful for us. And Mathieu, you mentioned that you've done it too. Maybe you can comment.
Yeah, it's indeed very structured against the criteria that were described earlier. And this is very useful exercise for everyone around the management team, for instance, to understand why they're doing such things and how it fits into a global organization vision instead of just silo, my job is to do this. and what was said is really true. I think this, the power of this model is that it's not prescriptive. It's not saying you should do this. It's just asking open questions about do you have something that does this, and is it consistently applied, and do you document it, and how is there an improvement loop on this, and things like this. So this is very useful in terms of having a whole group understand what are the next steps on various aspects.
I agree. I think, you know, the involvement in the self-assessment has been really useful for us in integrating and tightening up the linkages between three relatively separate services within the IAN department, which became four services. We're talking about the contracted services here, with the introduction of Root DNSSEC. So, you know, we have a bunch of services, and I think we were less integrated, and now we are more integrated, and we found the self-assessment mechanism a useful way of stealing good ideas from each other. You know, if Michelle's doing a particular thing in protocol parameters and I think, oh, that's good, I can go and take that idea and go and use it when I'm working with the RIRs and so on. And It is a particularly useful methodology for us, which I think has tightened up and helped us improve the services that we offer over the last two or so years in particular. I mean, we're coming up in January to our fourth self-assessment, but I think, you know, the first two were working out how to do it. And the third one was, aha, now we're here. It does take a little bit of dedication. Now we're coming up for the fourth one. I think we are making some real improvements in putting the systems in place for ensuring that we are good at identifying specific areas for making improvements and then getting those improvements made. You know, a really important part of doing that is, of course, working out what it is that is really important to our customers. So that's one of the reasons that we're here, and it's important that we find out what is most important to you, because one of the things we don't want to do is we don't want to concentrate on improving areas that are less important to you. So getting a list of top priorities from this room and obviously more broadly from people who aren't here, what we're going to be doing follow-up sessions. I've arranged one next week with someone who can't be in the room. This is an important aspect of getting getting some sort of scoring for where we should be focusing our efforts. And that's something that I'm looking forward to, because so far we've been putting in place foundations and fundamentals, and now I think we're at a position where we can start to make improvements that are going to produce some real noticeable benefits to the people that we deal with.
Yes, Leslie, please.
So a question, and I know this is a bit out of scope for this session, but I mean, it's great to hear Ayana talking about AFQM and so on. Where does this fit into ICANN's quality strategy? Because you kind of, I think you could end up with an island of EFQM, whereas EFQM is an organizational model. Mm-hmm. And so where does this all link up at an organization level?
So we were seen sort of as a pilot for moving it into the broader ICANN. And this is something that, you know, ICANN is looking at. I know that I believe the IT team is now. And so we're doing it kind of in a staggered fashion, even though it should be an overall organizational strategy. But we have had some changes in management over the years, the last three. And so we were the pilot. Now I think our success or perception of success or non-success or whatever is something to be leveraged by the rest of the organization.
Thank you. I wanted to make a quick comment on what you had said earlier, Elise. Yes, it is really, it's a lot of work if you start with EFQM and if you're doing self-assessments for the very first time. I'm sure you've all experienced that. By the way, the EFQM model is something that is continuously being developed by the EFQM. Actually, the eight fundamental concepts that I just demonstrated to you in the presentation earlier are from the 2013 model, which was actually only published exactly 1 week ago. So this is brand new, and it's not completely new in what it means. But the EFQM has also realized that these kind of assessments are very, very tedious and require a lot of work, and they do accept also other forms of self-assessments based on a so-called enabler map. However, it is my personal experience and true belief that to start with something like that, it is a really good idea to force the organization to write down what they're doing in a document like that. But there are other ways of continuing on the road to excellence once you've done that and once you've been into that in a while. So I just wanted to make sure that this is something that everybody takes home, if this is something that may have interested you in business excellence. Thank you.
Okay,
Leo.
We're drawing towards the end of our 90 minutes, and one of the things I'm aware of, I don't actually come to ICANN meetings on a particularly regular basis. We did a session about this at the start of our process in Seoul. That's about 10 meetings ago, I think. And so for me, that was like two meetings ago, but for almost everyone else in the room, that was 10 meetings ago. That's obviously a while back, and now we're at ICANN 45. And would a session like this be welcome again in a future meeting? And if so, what sort of periodicity would be useful to people? Or is a session like this not as useful and people would prefer to find out about what we're doing and contribute through some other mechanism like a webinar or something else?
Yes, please.
Yeah, thank you, Leo. First of all, thank you for organizing the session. In my view, suggestions can be very useful, at least interesting for us as IANA stakeholders. We can also benefit from exchanges of experience. That's always good. I think a yearly basis would be fine for that kind of discussion to happen, because we need to see what has improved or changed in between the sessions. And if I were to make a suggestion, would be probably to spend a little time on what has actually changed and what kind of benefit that the framework has brought to IANA in the last period, and what are the expected changes for the upcoming period. I think that would be extremely useful to have a few examples that show that it's not only about the process, but also about the results.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Yes, please.
Well, I happened to be in this Seoul session a while ago. I think this one was vastly more useful than the first one, just because everyone has learned that is farther down this path. There is also personal development things here that back then in Seoul it was not sort of an issue close to my daily work. It's going to become such an issue soon. So I really like this exchange of ideas and also the opportunity to give feedback about the customer feeling on my end. So I think I would very much like to see it again in about 1.5 years from now.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Thank you very much. I expect a lot of people in this room speak to people who aren't in this room but might be interested in providing us input. And you'll notice that because we really wanted this to be a discussion, we didn't think it would be highly effective to have remote participation, because typing your input is very difficult if you're going to be providing experiences. What I have arranged for someone who can't be in this room next week is to go through a similar process with them face to face. I would be very happy to organize this sort of thing either face to face or one on one with either an individual or a group over the internet in the future. And if you speak to people who are interested in this, and you could either introduce them to me or me to them, that would be really good, because we thought a nice chazelech 20 to 30 people would be good for this discussion, but clearly we have significantly more people who are interested in this. So if I could make a request of you, it's if you speak to colleagues or partners who could be providing us useful input, then I'd be grateful if you could hook them up with us. And I've got business cards if anyone wants to contact me. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the input. I promised that I was going to be taking notes, and I've taken a whole bunch of notes. I've got good ideas for improvements, which next week I'm going to sit down with people and see how we can implement them and make things a little bit better. It was nice to have a no complaints good enough, but we want to turn that into really excellent. So thank you very much. This is helpful in us getting from good enough to excellent.